Ladies and gentlemen, welcome on into the QSO Radio Show live on WTWW. Our guest, believe it or not, is somebody that is related to the biggest ham event on the planet, all right? This is Michael Coulter, W8CI, and I don't know what his position is right now with Hamvention, but he's the man. So he's on with us tonight. We're going to talk all about Hamvention 2018. So welcome in, Michael. Where would you like to hit the ground running?
Hey, well, first, Ted, thank you for having me on your program. You're one of those many people that provide such a service for amateur radio throughout the whole world, and it's a real honor to be here. And I want to say hello to our listeners all over the world. If you want to contact me, if you look up the QRZ page, www.qrz.com, type in my call sign, W8CI, that's Whiskey 8 Charlie India. And you can either call me if you are a shortwave listener. You can leave me a web message, and there's a way to do that. Or if you want to send me an email, my email is listed on there as well. So anyway, thank you, Ted, for having me, and on you and your folks there. I am I live just south of Xenia, Ohio, in the countryside, and I believe you are down near Nashville. Is that correct?
Right. We're in Lebanon, which is a suburb that's kind of east of Lebanon by about 15 miles, maybe 18 miles.
Well, we started off pretty cold here today, Ted. We started at about 20 degrees Fahrenheit.
Ooh.
And we're looking for things to start to warm up. So let's start talking about, let's kind of recap just a little bit from last year, and then we'll move into some of the things for this year. How does that sound?
Okay, now let me just ask a question here. I just want to squelch a rumor. It's not true that Donald Trump is buying the old Hera Arena, is it?
Well, I'm not really sure.
I'm just kidding. See, rumors go all over the place. People start stuff, and somebody else repeats it, and somebody else repeats it. And oh my goodness gracious! Yeah, I don't foresee, and maybe you have a better insight, but I don't foresee anything at all happening with Hera Arena anytime soon. I think that we're way past that, you know.
Yes, we are. We're way past that right now. It is it cost a considerable amount of money to refurbish it, to even get it. It's been abandoned, and there's weeds growing up through the parking lot, and after being at the new location in Xenia, I can imagine going back there.
Oh, no, I don't think so. And my observation was this last year, I thought to myself, now everybody's going to really be spoiled. I mean, really spoiled. And if they were have to go back there, I don't know what would happen. But, I mean, it was, just the layout of the buildings and being able to get around from building to building is easy. And then on top of that, it all converges in the middle with, I would call it a food court. I don't know what you call it, but what was that, David?
Oh, yeah. I enjoyed the food. It was good.
So it was.
Well, we're going to talk about that a little bit, too, that food.
Not to interrupt you, but we're renegades here. We don't really. I couldn't help the Trump thing. It was just, it just happened. I don't know. Anyhow, go ahead.
Well, maybe Mike Pence might come. He's an Indiana guy; he could drive right over. But
that would be nice. That'd be cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll leave that. We'll leave that political thing go right now. But anyway, let's start off a little bit about this last year, and then we'll go right into what we're seeing this year. If you want to hear a little bit of that. We sort of have this motto that we kick around a lot in our group. We just take a slamming and keep on hamming. I mean, it's pretty much true. We up until the show last year, there were so many naysayers and backseat drivers, and we're working, you know, morning to night and beyond to try to get everything set in a very short period of time. And I want to mention, we only had like 8 months. We pushed the start button, 8 months to get ready to move a huge event like that. And I would say that those of you who put on Hamfest throughout the world know that the planning that goes into that. We only had about 657 volunteers. And so, gosh, the event could not happen without those volunteers. So anyway, opening day came, and we're all kind of looking around going, wow, I wonder what the verdict will be. What will our fellow hams think? And what was our first big issue, Ted? What do you think the first big issue we had was?
Getting the cars into the place. Getting people parked.
Right.
That was, but I'll tell you what was really fun. Honest to goodness, you probably think I'm crazy. But being in this big line, and David, correct me if I'm wrong, and all of these guys on one simplex frequency and all talking back and forth, all stuck in traffic. And I mean, you heard some of the craziest stuff you've ever heard in your life. I'm talking about humor and passing the time on ham radio. So even though there was a major traffic jam coming in, honest to goodness, I don't think I've ever had that much fun on 2 meters in a long, long time. And that's the truth.
That's good to hear. I didn't hear that one. And but I will say the great thing that happened, our Greene County Sheriff, we were talking to him about that major traffic snarl that happened on that Friday morning. So he said, I'll take care of it. And the next morning, more people came. I mean, more, I believe there were more there Saturday than were there Friday. I mean, Saturday was just a beautiful, lots of people there. People were able to stretch out. There's so many places to go. And, the Greene County Sheriff took care of that with his folks. But I'll tell you what else. He took another step. He's recently got his amateur radio license. So we are all really excited about that because he's like part of us now.
Now we got to get him on the radio. We got to get him on QSO.
Yeah, I would like to. I've already talked to him about doing that. And there's some other of the county people that I want to bring on. Let's get to that. But let's finish just kind of the highlights of 2017, the things that we faced. Now, I know everybody says, Michael, don't start off with the negatives, but these aren't really the negatives. This is the reality of what happened. And I truly believe that, you know, what we want to do is let people know, absolutely, we face these problems. Absolutely, are we fixing them? You're darn tootin'. We're working hard on it. So, you know, we had the big rains. Heavy rains. I mean, unbelievable rains.
These were monsoons. These were monsoons. I mean, gallons of water falling out of the sky, you know. And on top of that, it was relentless. It didn't give up. So you didn't. There was no time for anything to evaporate. I mean, it was just kept coming down, you know.
It was more than the drainage systems could even handle. But you know what? I keep a fifth wheeler there. Well, I took it up. And it's sort of my office there, and it's a little refuge. But I just spent the week there because there's so much to do, people to meet, things to get ready, and so I'm laying there asleep in the not really asleep, but I'm laying there trying to go to sleep, and that rain just was relentless on top of my fifth wheeler there, just kept pouring. And I thought, oh my gosh, what will it be in the morning? And so, you know, it's all this, and, you know, people were parking their cars. They were coming in. The rains let up most generally. And then we started getting all these complaints later in the day about the infield, you know, where we have the flea market. And so one of the big questions, Ted, has been, what are you going to do about the mud this year? So we had a couple ideas, and one of the ideas, we were going to sell jars. We've been trying to sell jars of a Hamvention 2017 flea market mud, and we couldn't get any buyers, but we tried. But and the other thing that we thought about doing, maybe we should put up a booth up right before you go into the flea market, and we could sell boots. You think that'd work?
Yeah, well, you know what I was thinking about? Yeah, I don't know, when you were a kid, did you ever wear those things called galoshes?
Oh, my God. My parents, they made me wear those things.
And they got little metal clamp over things, you know?
Metal clamps on it.
But you know what's going to happen? You and I are going to set a stand up to sell boots and galoshes, and it won't rain, okay? We'll go through a dry spell. There won't be an ounce of rain. We'll be stuck with all those things.
Well, it could be, you know, your Hamvention commemorative boots. You know, I mean, why not? We got shirts, and then you might as well get the boots. Anyway, I'm making light of that a little bit. But I was at a meeting last night. I mean, a meeting tonight, meeting last night. We have meetings all the time about what we're going to do. So last night, General Chairman Ron Kramer and myself were at a meeting up in meeting with the Fair Board in the county up at the Expo Center, where we have the event. And we're really kind of hashing out what's, you know, issues and things that we're working on next year and how we're doing it. We have a checklist of things we're going after. So what's happening with the mud is, you know, you have those travel ways in the flea market, you know, where the vehicles will travel, a couple of different kind of roadways through there. So the county engineer and the city people have gotten together, and as soon as the weather here straightens up just a little bit, they're going to peel off about 3 inches down each one of those lanes, 3 inches of sod, and then they're going to put about 3 inches of asphalt grindings, you know, that come up off the road, and they'll be able to roll that in there. You won't be able to get stuck on that stuff, and that is going to happen very soon. When that does happen, I will be taking pictures and prove to everybody, you know, in earnest what we are doing to repair the traffic. And, you know, some people would like to have completely paved. That's very expensive, you know. And so we are trying to get that. We are going to get that done. So we were very excited about that. We don't know if we will make it 100% with that, getting it done, but I think we will. There was a lot of commitment last night on that. So what do you think of that for taking care of mud?
Well, that sounds good, because as long as people can get around, you know, if you have to step off onto some area that's wet, that's not much of a problem, as long as you can get around and not get stuck. You know, I think that's the major thing. I know. I didn't even go into the flea market. I'm telling you the truth. I did not go. You know, and I wanted to, but I just didn't have the time, because we're on the air, we're broadcasting, and you got to get in and out quick. You know, and I just wasn't able to do it. But I did. I enjoyed all of the indoor exhibits. I guess I went everywhere looking at stuff, and that was very cool. I miss the flea market though. But that's one thing about Dayton. It's so big that you just can't see everything. I mean, you try as you may, you know. And then if you're like I am, if you're ADD, you know, you go into an area where there's all kinds of stuff, you just get confused. That's why I'm walking around, even in the flea markets, you know, like at Harrah's, the same way. I get just like giddy, you know, because I'm looking at all this old stuff that I used to own, you know, Hallicrafters and Heathkit stuff and everything, you know, and I'm dragging Holly around, boring her to death, saying, "Hey, look at that! I used to have one of those." And it's like she's going, "Okay." David, now on the other hand, let me tell you something, Michael. A couple of times this has happened. I built an 811A linear amplifier when I was very young.
Yeah.
And I'm walking through the flea market, and I looked over and I said, "Boy, does that thing look familiar?" You know. And I looked over again, and I realized that was my old 811A amplifier I built, you know. And so I had to buy it. Why not? I mean, you couldn't live without something like that, you know. And that's happened two or three times where I've had something I built and built from scratch. And then I don't know what happened to it. You know, when you're young, this stuff just disappears. Oh, you trade it for something you can't live without, you know. And then all of a sudden, there it is in the flea market. I'm like, oh, my God, you know. And I get all excited. And, of course, David looks at me and says, boy, that thing looks pretty rough. You really want to take that home.
Well, a lot of the time I look at it and it's like, that's really heavy, isn't it?
that's why
you're being nice to me.
But we take wagons now. We take wagons. Because you have to have...
So I want to mention something in there. Go ahead, David. Finish the story. I like hearing it.
No, I'm good. I mean, it's just... But yeah, I mean, we've definitely found a couple of radios that he's had in the past, or even you know, like the scratch ones that he had built up. It's really neat finding that stuff.
Well, I'm a sucker for that stuff too. I have pre World War II shortwave receivers, you know, old Brettlings, and all of them work, and. I really like the old equipment. You know, I think, Ted, you and I are kind of like a vacuum tube guys living in a solid-state world.
Yeah, you know, yeah, and I think sometimes the vacuum's in my head, you know. But
go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you were going to say something.
Yeah, I was going to tell you a little bit of one of the issues that people have when they go into the flea market and they find this wonderful boat anchor and they, you know, we get a cart and they take it out to maybe the bus stop and then they got to get on a bus and carry it on a bus. And we've heard a lot of complaints about that. Like, man, I can't get my boat anchor. I can't get this big, beautiful radio comfortably to my parking spot. So what we're doing this year, we are going to have a place where we take it and it's a secure area. We give you, like a claim check ticket. And then you can get on the bus and go back to your car. And then we're going to have a quick drive-through access area where then you can come back, you know, because the traffic will pretty much be, you know, the major traffic is in the beginning of the day. So when you come back, easy drive-through, you get you check in your ticket. Then you can fill up your pickup truck with all the things you bought in the flea market and then go. So that's it. We listened and heard people complaining about that, so we're making that change this year.
Like that is, you know, that's very creative, you know, because, you know, I'm lucky. I'm blessed. I go out and I find a Heathkit DX100, you know, or an HA10 Marauder or something like that. But this 811A amplifier that I built is a real good example of that. And it's heavy. I mean, it's a heavy brute.
Oh, yeah.
So here you got Holly... bringing us, I don't know, she went out and bought these fold-up wagons. They're just a full-size wagon like you had when you were a kid, but they fold up. So she's got two of those out there. And so, you know, we cautiously pick it up, put it in the wagon, and David takes it to the car. So, I mean, we talked. I teasing David saying, you ought to start a shuttle service, walking through there saying, hey, you want me to haul this to your car? You know, and, you know, $10, I'll haul it to your car. But there's nowhere else on the planet, you know, that you're going to find this stuff. I mean, there's nobody. I mean, even in the smaller ham fest, you might find a piece or two, you know. But I remember going out into the flea market and finding these old Altec green Altec mixers that we used at radio a long time ago. So I called a friend of mine. Actually, he's a fellow that gave me my first job in radio, and I said, "Hey, you know what they got out here?" And he says, "What?" I said, they've got Altec mixers out here. I said, they're about $100. Oh, God, pick one up for me right now. I want one, you know. So, you can find just about anything. I mean, it's, and if you're looking for, oh, my goodness, if you're looking for parts like capacitors and diodes and things like that.
Yeah, and you know, in my mind, and I've got lots and lots of pictures of hamventions of the past, and, you know, been at this for many years, but some of the displays that people do in the flea market are truly works of art. You know, I mean, just the way they display things and the signs they have. I mean, it becomes and that's Americana. I mean, not even Americana; it's amateur radio at its best. And to see things like that displayed, you know, beautiful old equipment, clean equipment, and it doesn't have to be that. It's just the fact that, people are gathered there selling this gear from ages gone by up until modern. And I don't know, that's part of the thrill of it for me, Ted, as well. And I'm with you on that.
Well, see, the whole thing is... I don't want to hold you up, but we got plenty of time, so don't worry. It's the magic. It's the magic that is at Dayton, that even when we were at the Hera Arena with all of the handicaps that were there, and I don't think people realize how many there were, that's a pretty horrible place to have a hamvention, okay? But if you got into it, you didn't even think about that. It didn't even enter your mind. You know, you were too caught up in what I would consider to be an intangible thing, if you want to call it that, and that is the spirit of ham radio. And I don't even like calling it a hobby. I like calling it a fraternity. And Art Bell got me going on that. He said, no, it's not a hobby, it's a fraternity. And I'm like, yes, it is. But let me tell you a real quick story to illustrate something. When I was a kid, my dad gave me and I may have told this before, and if I did, excuse me, I'm old, okay, so I'll tell things over. My dad gave me an old Gruno shortwave radio. This was the first shortwave I ever had. And I was so intrigued by it, I had to take it out of the case so I could see the tubes glow, especially at night when I was laying in bed. I put the radio right by my bottom bunk bed, and I listened to all kinds of things. Man, I didn't know what half of it was. You know, there's some pretty strange noises on shortwave, you know. One of the strange noises is WTWW. But anyways, I had this thing by the bed, and I was standing on the... Yeah. I'm standing on the concrete floor, or there's tile. And I reached over, and I touched that radio, and it poked me. Not real hard, but it was aggravating. So I pulled the wooden... I took the wooden knob for the volume control, and I slid it back on. I said, I ain't doing that no more. So I had that knob there. Well, later on, I tried to put the radio back in the case. The wooden knob was stuck. And I didn't know if my dad was going to be mad about that or not. But, you know, that was... And that's the last I remember of that radio. Okay, so now I'm in Nashville, Tennessee, some, what, 40-something years later. Mm-hmm. And Ronnie Millsap says to me, he says, Ted, there's a hardware store down there on 21st. They've got everything under the... You know, I'm not like, they got radio stuff? Yeah, it's a hardware store. They got radio stuff. So David and I ventured in. And sure enough, this place was full of vintage equipment stuff. I mean, I was like, whoa. You know, it was not like the Dayton Hamvention, but I mean, this hardware store was loaded. I have no idea if the guy collected or it was, I don't know. So I'm looking, and on the bottom shelf, there's a radio. Looks, you know, has kind of a familiar thing. Now, you got to understand, my Gruno, I wired up an external, I mean, across the volume control so I could plug it into my reel-to-reel tape recorder and record, okay? And it had one of those electromagnetic speakers. I know you've seen those before. And I had to disconnect all of that to hook up a permanent magnet speaker. But then I also had to find a choke to put in there because they were using that as part of the filter supply. You know, so anyways, I did all of that. So I said to David, what brand is on that radio down there? And he looks and he says, that's a Gruno. I said, no, it's a Gruno. I said, get that thing out of there and bring it here. And he brought it to me. And I looked, and there's the volume control modification so I could record. It was the radio. It was the radio, including the wooden knob stuck on the volume control. But no case, just the chassis. And I asked the man, I said, what do you want for this? He said, oh, about $55. I don't know what got into me, but I said, oh, my God, I just don't need any more stuff. I just don't need no more stuff. So we left. And then I started getting, you know, remorseful. I should have bought that old radio. My God, what's wrong with me? You know, but I dismissed it from my mind. But on Father's Day, there was this mysterious package wrapped up, and I opened it, and here's that radio. David had got it and snuck it in the trunk of the car without telling me. And so that was out. So now here I am at the Dayton Hamvention, and I'm looking around, and here is a pristine Gruno, the exact model of the one I had. Of course, now it's sitting in my ham shack, you know. But I mean, and it works great. But you're right. See, this is a beautiful old radio, and it was in the person restored it to mint condition. you know, and I've got it here, and I've got my dad's picture on it, you know. So it's, I mean, it, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. You can't duplicate this stuff anywhere. There's no way. And I, even though my story is very, very unusual, as people pass by that flea market area, they go through there, they see things from their past that triggers all kinds of memories. And that, I believe, is the magic of the Dayton Hamvention, part of the Hamvention. But that's a good portion of it, I believe. And
absolutely.
We've got to keep that alive. But go ahead. Now, you want to go? I know there's some subjects you want to cover, so just have at it. But I wanted to sneak that in because I wanted to set the mood, just like me finding my old amplifier out there. I mean, that doesn't equal anything. I mean, it's hard to come up with anything that equals that, you know. And David was in the middle of the shortwave radio thing, so I mean. So walking the flea market area, he knows he knows that, you know, I'm going to be very irrational out there. There's no your emotions take over, and the magic, the complete magic of the Dayton Hamvention overtakes you. You become drunk on it, you know, and there's nothing else like it. You know, there really isn't. Go ahead, sir. I do not want to.
No, I love your stories, Ted. I mean, I think I'll take a quick moment to let all of your listeners know that they can find out more about Hamvention at www.hamvention.org. And, you know, we keep that website up all the time. And I'll remind everybody, my call sign is a Whiskey 8 Charlie India, WHCI. And if you look me up on QRZ, and I'm good to get emails, pluses or minuses, would take it all. So anyway, with that being said, the other big thing that I want to tell you about is the buildings. You know, last year we had tents, and then we worked with the county folks, the county commissioners, the county administrator, and they approved $1.5 million for another building. And so all of that was approved. And they went out for the bids and everything, but they just could not get it built in time for this Hamvention. We thought it was this coming Hamvention. We thought it'd be possible, and they thought it was possible, but on the building materials, they just cannot get them in time. I don't know all the reasons for that. Of course, there's been an awful lot of damage and hurricane damage down south, so. Don't really know where if that played into it.
Well, that is a wide sweeping problem, including getting electronic parts and things. You know, we've gone through total, I guess I want to say, I'll just say a hell, trying to get parts to get back up on the air. We got everything together, you know, and we're ready to put it all together and push the button, you know. But this is not just in like building materials; it's across the board. It's everything.
Well, yeah, and so, but the other other part of that is that it will be built for a Hamvention 19, and also for Hamvention 18 coming up. There was a building there we could not get or could not use on the in that main campus area, and that was what they called the fairgrounds furniture. Well, they have since, they're in the process of moving out of that building, and that's a 7,500 square foot building, and we will be getting that building as well. So between next year, but there's such a huge demand that people that want to come and have booths in the buildings that, you know, who knows, we may have these two new buildings and still have to bring in a tent or even more people. So with the new buildings, we will be matching what we had, you know, at Hera. And I think it's going to be much more comfortable too. So, and the new building being built will have yet another set of restrooms, and I think they're going to have showers. Don't hold me to the shower thing, but they will be heated and air conditioned.
Well, you know, one thing that was cool in 2017 was the fact that, yes, there was plenty of restrooms, there weren't lines, and the restrooms were clean, and they didn't have any particular aroma about them. they were clean, and they, I mean, it was, that was impressive, you know, to me it was. But anyways, go ahead. Yeah, I don't want to interrupt.
In our very first meetings with the Greene County officials, we told them restrooms cannot smell. You got to have people keeping them up, keeping them clean, keeping them neat. And you know what? They went, they listened, and they took all the fixtures out of all the restrooms, resealed all the floors, redid, you know, made sure all the plumbing was secure and the places were well lit and clean. And they've, excuse me, they have assured us they're going to do that this year. So the other thing that, I noticed in, was I thought that the great big buildings could have been just a little bit better ventilated. And so this year they are going through all the ventilation system, ventilation systems on the roof, and to make sure that everything is in good working order. And they're going to just leave those on all night to make sure that the temperature is nice and steady as the day starts, because it's, we don't, those buildings do not have air conditioning, but they have a pretty good airflow, and they have those big roll-up doors. So even if they had air conditioning, it would probably not work as well as if we just, you know, with those doors rolled open. And I'll let you in on a little secret that I think most people know. The air conditioners at Hera hadn't really worked very well for years, and in some cases didn't work at all. And when they did turn them on, it would cause lots of leaks and problems, and was frustrating to us putting on a show with it in the building that was having problems. Now, the Wampler family tried all they could, but they were having, you know, it was just kind of getting too old too quick. So it, getting old quickly, I guess is the thing, going downhill. So, you know, we left on very good terms with them. We waited maybe to the last moment to kind of part ways. But, you know, Hera Arena is in the past now. It was, you know, like the Biltmore before that. So, you know, Hamvention keeps on growing. So we're really excited. We're going to have the buildings we need. And the most exciting thing, Ted, is really we have the commitment from the city officials, the government officials in the region, from the county engineer to the sheriff, to the township people, as well as the city of Xenia. And so we're really excited about that. So the other thing that we'll talk about in a minute, I'm going to turn this back over to you. We're going to talk a little bit about food. Go ahead. I'm sure you got some good comments.
And you know what you can do? You can buy that brand new ICOM 7300 from R&L Electronics. That's right, R&L Electronics. Or you can buy that brand new ICOM 7610 from R&L Electronics, or a new D-Star radio. I've been talking about R&L Electronics for a good while, and you've heard me go on and on about Roger and the crew at R&L. When you call there, you get answers. They answer the phone. The people answering the phone are knowledgeable folks. They carry everything. They've got transceivers. They've got antennas. They've got microphones. They've got coax, linear amplifiers. They've got antenna tuners. I mean, they've got everything ham radio. They're outfitted for the radio amateur. What a place to go. You'll love dealing with them because they're great people. You'll get great service. Everything will be shipped out promptly. There's nothing worse dealing with somebody that doesn't take your order seriously and you don't know whether or not it's going to get there on time. Believe me, I've been there. I've been there ordering ham gear. That does not happen with R&L Electronics. Roger and his folks care about you, and they care about the fraternity of ham radio. They want to keep you going. They want to keep it going. For the best price, the best possible price, and the best service and quality from individuals that know the amateur radio hobby and really care, remember the name R&L Electronics. Go up to the web, go to Google, and put in R&L Electronics. Contact them and go to their website, and you can't go wrong. Let me tell you a little bit about the ICOM IC7610. This is a high-performance RMDR receiver, transceiver. This thing will pick out the faintest of signals, even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. And the 7610 is a direct sampling software-defined radio, and it's going to change the world's definition. That's the ICOM 7610. Go to ICOMAmerica.com/amateur. That's ICOMAmerica.com/amateur.
All I know is we walked through the area, and the biggest problem we had with food was trying to figure out what we were going to get.
Meat on a stick.
Yeah.
Holy cow. That was good.
They had everything under the sun there. And what was cool about that is all the vendors that were selling food, they were all very, very friendly. In other words, that was one of the first things I've noticed because, you know, so many times, you know, there people get slammed and, boy, you order something, they just kind of shove it at you, you know. But there, everybody was really friendly, and I was impressed. I can't even remember what all we had. We had two or three different things, and all of it was good. All of it was very reasonably priced, too. This is another thing, because a lot of times you go to a venue, and somebody sets up, you know, and they're selling, you know, $20 Cokes and $25 hot dogs, and you're like, oh, my God, I can't believe this. No. Everything was very reasonably priced, and I thought that was cool. And I was trying to think there. You know, you had several vendors there that were serving beer, you know, which I thought was interesting. I've not really seen that at a ham fest, but that's the way it. I'll just put it this way: that's the way it used to be when I was a member of the Motor City Radio Club in Detroit, Michigan, actually Dearborn, and they had Field Day. They had the Stroh Brewery Company out there. it kind of added to everybody having a good time, kind of like, you know, going to a German fest or something like that. You know, I think it really kind of set the whole atmosphere, everything about it, the food, the drinks, and the area that the food was located in. It was easy to get around, and each vendor clearly displayed what they were selling, so you could get thoroughly confused. So What was it, David? You said you were hung up on something they had there. I can't remember.
I enjoyed the meat on the stick. They had a coffee guy there as well who was selling coffee. Very good coffee as well.
There you go.
I am quite a coffee snob at times too. So yeah, it was good.
Yeah, he is a coffee snob. All he uses is those. What are those things?
I use a French press.
Yeah, French press, you know, and it's got to come out like motor oil. You know, and then he's happy.
Yep,
you know.
10W-40.
So, tell me about your experience with the food there at Hamvention, because it was such a radical change from before.
Well, that was actually part of our plan, that when we went there, we told them, you know, we want to have some say in the food. We were locked out of that at Hera, and you know, of course, Hera had the vending. And. And so some of the, we told them, you know, I grew up around there. I mean, I live out in the countryside south of there. And if you see my mailing address, you'll see I'm a Xenia mailing address, although I'm not in the city, but still the post office covers this out in the rural area, south of Xenia. But I do want to say that I talked to them. I said, hey, you know, my kids went through 4-H and we got to have the Cattlemen's Association. I mean, it comes right off the farm and into that, to where they make they'll make you a steak sandwich or hamburgers, and it all comes right from, you know, it's Greene County beef, I believe, and so you're eating locally. And then along with that, the pork producers, the same way, they have tremendous stuff going on. And then there were people there that would have, you know, their homemade noodles and real mashed potatoes with, you know, grandma's gravy. And I mean, that was all around. There was great food.
So you can remember the specifics. I was too focused on the boat anchors. You know?
Yeah, now I'm remembering those noodles, because I had a bowl of them, and that was good too. I enjoyed that as well.
I need
homemade
to get Holly
ice cream. I mean, we had ice cream machine there, and. So let me tell you a little bit about the changes. The bleachers out in the center make things, it just to me and to us, it was like, like people were sitting out in the sun. And so they're going to be, we're probably moving those a little bit, and they're going to be some, a lot more shaded area and more tables. Interestingly enough, there's a lot of picnic tables in Greene County. So the Greene County guys are gathering up, you know, all the, tables from, you know, the different parks and that within our county. And they're going to stage them there. And then we're going to have people come over from the, what they call Green Joint, which is, where it's an alternative sort of high school where you can actually go and learn a trade. Imagine that, learning how to work with your hands. But it is, a wonderful program, and they're going to give us a price and put their kids on fixing those, picnic tables for us. And then we'll get a new count. If we have to buy more, there'll be more purchased. So we're excited about that. And if we move those bleachers, and there's a, I can't tell you which vendor yet, but there's a vendor that's talking about and has approached us, and they said, you know, we'd like to put some kind of a shade cloth, you know, in between those big buildings. And that way we could get people have a little bit more shade. And so there's engineers meeting on that this week to make determinations of how they will mount the hooks and things on the building and how that will work. So that area, that center area, will be freed up. But wait, that's not all. There's more. We are going to have more food vendors come in, but these food vendors will be doing some different ethnic foods, and people that, because we have people from all over the world, and we want people from all over the world to be able to get what they need, you know, based on what their diet is. So we're bringing some more ethnic foods in. So,
you know what, do you know what kind of ethnic foods that you're going to be bringing in?
I will find out next time we talk. I will be getting that information.
Have you ever had any Polish food?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So you know what pierogies are?
Yes, I know what pierogies are. I've had lots of Japanese food. I've spent a lot of time in the Middle East. Matter of fact, I was in the Peace Corps in North Africa, in Tunisia, an Arab country, and ate a lot of different foods there. And I think I was in Doha, Qatar, several times. And the reason I was there, amateur radio. Made a lot of friends there, went over there. And let me give you this quick story. I met with the one of the prime ministers who is in that Qatar is a monarchy. And so I met with one of the prime ministers there, and, you know, it was really nice. He's founded the Qatar Amateur Radio Club. So we're sitting there, a bunch of the amateurs around, and he has his bodyguards, and we're having this wonderful meal right on the that Arabian Sea. Just beautiful. And we were talking. He's close to the same age as I am, maybe just a little older. He went to Michigan State University, and he spoke very good English. And so I told him, I said, you know, when I was a kid, I would just like you were mentioning, Ted, I would dial up and down the shortwave bands. I'd go, you know how you go up one end and you go, I reached the end, and you go back again, or you might switch bands and you go up and down and you hear all those sounds, or you hear people talking in languages and stuff. What are they talking about? You know, what is that? And I told him my experiences with that. And he looked at me and he smiled and he said, I was doing the same thing. I wondered what your people were talking about. I was listening. So the bond of the, you know, for the shortwave listeners, people, you know, younger people in amateur radio that don't have a license, or people that are just listening all over the world, the magic is still there, the magic of the airwaves.
Oh, goodness, yes.
And so at any rate, I got way far afield here in another part of the world. But I will mention, when I was in Doha a couple of times, I was a speaker at Qatar University about amateur radio, and more than one time, and just a great opportunity, as I've done the same in India and in Germany. And so at any rate, I've, you know, being involved with amateur radio and hamvention has taken me literally all over the world. And
have you not noticed though? Have you not noticed if you? I mean, I'm not a DX hound. I don't chase DX. I don't know where I lie. I'm more of a rag chewer, I guess. But anyhow, when you get on something like, let's just say you're up on 17, and you're working a station in Italy or a station in France. Have you ever noticed the mutual courtesy that you get from these people and the mutual respect you get? I know Alan Pitts told me, and I know you know Alan, but Alan told me that, you know, he had been talking to this fellow overseas for so long and really never gave it second thought, but he walked in at Hamvention, and so I guess the guy looked him up or was, you know, trying to track him down. But Alan got to meet the guy face-to-face, you know, that he had been talking to for so long overseas. And I could tell just the way Alan told the story, this was like, it just kind of blew his mind, you know, to meet somebody. So it is the magic, and it's the fellowship, and it's all those elements that are that make it up. So I can imagine in your world travels and being able to speak about amateur radio to these folks, I don't know how many languages you speak, but when you do that, do you have a translator with you or something like that, or how does
sometimes
that...
I have, but in Qatar and in Germany, they really want to practice their English. But there have been times when I use translators, and I guess I'm a natural slow speaker, so it's easy for people to understand me.
You speak special English all the time. So,
yeah. And the other interesting place I find in the world, well, I was in Tokyo not long ago. I guess in the last year I was in Tokyo for that Hamfest. I was in, you know, Germany, in Switzerland, was, you know, Friedrichshafen. And then also I made a trip to Ireland earlier in the year. And then, then the other events that happen stateside. That's pretty busy. And when I'm over there, I just love talking to people. But let me tell you about my India trip. Is that I was over there working with the National Institute of Amateur Radio on invitation. I went over there. I got there, and I mean, if you've never been to India, it's a wonderful exotic place. And I guess I can explain it like this. One of my hosts there, he said, "You know, Michael, anything can happen here because this is India, you know." And I really enjoyed that. But when I got there, they had, believe it or not, they had a whole greeting crew for me, and at the National Institute of Amateur Radio, had several buildings there, and wonderful, wonderful station, and they were so dedicated, and the government was helping them with this. And so one of the things that they wanted me to do was to go from and meet so many different government officials in different places in India to explain to them how amateur radio was beneficial to would be beneficial to their country and how it's been beneficial to our country and other places in the world. And I really enjoyed that trip. You know, it gave me an opportunity to speak to a lot of people, non-hams, but we're also in a place you know, not necessarily in the United States, for sure. So one of the things that would happen there is that a young person would get pass their amateur radio test. They'd be real excited. But you know how long it took to get a license? To get your license was 1 year. So about 11 months after you took that test, there'd be government officials would come to the door. You know, and the children's parents would answer the door, and they say, "Yeah, your little son here wants to get, you know, he wants the amateur radio license." And so they're asking him, "Why do you want to talk to people, other people in the world? What is it? Why do you want this license?" So there was maybe, I don't know that they were trying to be intimidating, but I can't imagine the intimidation factor. You know, you're 12, 13, 14 years old. You don't want to answer wrong. But since then, you know, and I explained to so many of the officials there, I said, "You know, we just turn the license in about a day. And this is what they do." And since that time, there have been so many young hams. I mean, I am totally amazed at how many young hams there are in India. And if there's anybody in India listening, I hope you get back to us and say you're right. But they actually have, Ted, on the curriculum in some of the schools, amateur radios, part of the curriculum.
My goodness, you know, wouldn't that be wonderful if we had that here in the U.S.?
Yeah, you know, there was another incident that happened. You know, do you remember when that Nepal earthquake happened
yes.
a few years ago?
Yes.
Well, anyway, I'm sitting down at my shack, and on somewhere on 20 meters, I think it was in the extra portion. I don't really pay attention, but I had tuned down. I was listening to the emergency frequency there, and then suddenly somebody got on there and said, "Does anybody here? Can they make a quick contact into India?" To the amateur radio operators. And I thought, well, yeah, I can. So, you know, I'm running full legal limit. I was able to get through pretty quickly and say, yeah, I can do that. And so I contacted my friends in, they were in Delhi at that time. And they were actually packing up, getting ready to go up into Nepal. And so they gave me all the contact info and exactly what they were going to do, and so I could stay in contact with them. And anyway, I let the net know, you know, I've got a good contact in there. And suddenly I became really popular on that net. And a day or two later, I got information from a gentleman here in stateside, and he had a his wife was traveling from Nepal to Tibet on a bus through this mountainous region. But the bus was on one of those mountain roads, and the road in front of them had crumbled because of the earthquake, and the road behind them had crumbled. They were stranded, this mountainside. So his wife had a satellite phone. And so I emailed him back. I said, hey, please send me the coordinates. Have your wife send the coordinates. And she did. And within a few hours, you know, I was able to quickly get that information into my friends from India who were up in and had set station up in Nepal. And they were able to send a helicopter out, and they rescued, I think it was 19 or 21 people, somewhere in that vicinity.
Wow.
Off of that bus, and brought them back. And not only that, somebody from I'm out eating dinner that I went out to eat that evening. I get a call from somebody in the UN saying, hey, would you get hold of that guy that, you know, tell him that his wife will be, that she'll be leaving the country. She's safe right now in a hotel, and that she'll be leaving the country in a day or so. We're arranging a flight. I mean, that's the power of amateur radio and having friends, you know, in different parts of the world, because all I did was sit at my shack and made those communications.
Isn't that amazing? Totally amazing. Well, you know, something similar happened to us. Well, I say similar, kind of, sort of similar, on shortwave. We were on just playing music and talking and all that. And every once in a while, in between records, I like to stop and kind of give a little, I don't want to call it a sermonette, but I just get to talking about things the way they are and how folks have problems in their life and, you know, how they need to deal with it and how they need to, you know, trust God to move in their life and all those kind of things. So I do my little soapbox thing in between. One guy up on the forum said, hey, you know, they play a lot of really good music, and this Ted guy, he's a little religious, but he doesn't talk very long. So so he was kind of like giving us a plug. But anyways, all of a sudden I get this email from a guy, and he says, I'm on a boat. Well, he had left Scotland on a sailboat with his dog. And he was feeling rather despondent. I guess this is the reason why he did it. And he was going to go across the Atlantic Ocean and down to, and I'm trying to think, one of the Caribbean islands or ports down there. And so he's traveling along. And all of a sudden his automatic whatever it is went out. So he had to be up almost 24 hours a day piloting this sailboat, or else he's going to go off and some weird direction. And then it was taking so long, he ran completely out of provisions. But what he had was this little, like you're talking about, it was a satellite, not like a satellite phone, but it was like satellite email. He couldn't surf the web, and he couldn't make phone calls, but he could send emails off of an email account on satellite. So he's sending that to me, and then he sent a letter, said, I've run out of provisions. He said, I don't know what we're going to do. Me and my dog, I guess we're going to starve to death. So I said, well, give me your coordinates. So he sent me the coordinates, and I went on the air, and I announced, I said, we got a guy out in the sailboat in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean listening to us, and he's stranded. Is there anyone can help him? And I gave out the coordinates. Well, within a matter of probably 8 hours, I think it was, a boat had set course to go intercept him. And they took him on board. They gave him a whole bunch of groceries. He got on board and was able to shower and, you know, kind of. And then one of their technicians kind of fixed the automatic guidance system or whatever they use on a sailboat. And he was back in business. And then he kept in contact with us the rest of the way. I thought that was just absolutely unbelievable, you know.
Yeah, it is. That's beautiful.
You know, but that's the power of, well, I want to call it HF radio because it encompasses so many things. It's ham radio. It's international shortwave radio. And I think that it's just a marvelous, magical medium that you can't imagine, especially when we're on here and all of a sudden, like you said, I get an email is so strange because there are people who are stranded out in the middle of nowhere that somehow have email over a satellite, you know, but they'll send an email. One night I got emails out of the Indian Ocean. I must have had four or five people, and I don't know why. I guess the propagation was just running in that direction, you know, but you never know where the signal is going. You don't even have a clue. And the same thing is true with ham radio, because even though you are limited to the legal limit, that really doesn't mean much, because with propagation, if it goes in the right direction, there's just no telling where your signal's going to wind up.
That's the magic that hooked me.
And you don't know what you're going to hear either. I mean, you'll tune in one night and all of a sudden, man, here's this, you know, here's a bunch of guys talking that you would normally not hear, say, overseas. And, so I don't know. I mean, I was hooked as a kid. I mean, hooked really bad. And now, of course, I've got two sons that have their ham tickets, and they're both, radio engineers. David is with Trevecca Nazarene University over here, and I don't know what all he does. He does everything under the sun. But and that's the other thing that I want to say, and that is, when you get young people into amateur radio, there really is no limit to where they can go based on the background. And you look at somebody like Bob Heil as a good example of somebody that has early ham radio experience, and now look where it, you know, he'll tell you. He'll say, I owe everything I am and what I do, I owe it all to amateur radio. And I think, you know, so now I, you know, here I am with two sons. I went through a terrible, terrible situation with, I guess I want to say family. And we were drained of funds. So the only thing I had was teaching these guys amateur radio, how to pull antennas up into trees, you know, how to build small circuits up that you could transmit on, and all that sort of thing. And now, of course, they're working in professional engineering fields because of that. And I believe it's totally 100% attributed to this fraternity called ham radio. But anyways, I'm talking too much, Michael. I got to shut up and let you carry on, because you're the guy that's got all the information. And we're talking to Michael Coulter, by the way, folks, if you've just tuned in. And Michael's call sign is W8CI. And I don't know what your official position is with Hamvention, but he's the man that seems to know everything that's going on. And so that's what we're talking about. We're talking about Hamvention 2018. And we were talking about food originally, mm-hmm. and then we got diverted, I guess. I don't know. Well, Michael, yeah, I was asking you if you knew what a pierogi was, and you said right. Yes. Okay, then you know that's like wrapped in dough. Okay, now do you know what a gwumpki is?
No.
Okay, gwumpki is a stuffed cabbage. You put, you know, meat in the cabbage and all that kind of stuff. Okay, now let me, one more question. Do you know what a garage key is?
No.
That's a key you open a garage.
Oh, I thought you said a Gorovsky. I was going to say it sounds like a beer. Sort, you know?
No, I'm sorry. We have to remain on the lighter side here a little bit. I mean, that's what...
You got me on that, Ted. You got me on that. I like it.
Anyhow, but now with the food court or the food area taking on some ethnic food, that ought to be really, really interesting. And I'm just wondering what directions, you know, that'll go. I mean, you obviously the natural would be, you know.
We've kind of piqued your interest. Mm-hmm. But however, we want to, you know, in trying to put on a big event like this, we want some, you know, different things to happen and different things to occur that are pleasing, that isn't, well, this is the same as last year. I'm not a person that wants to do the same all the time. I like the, and I think that our club is like that too. We want to definitely improve, and we have that latitude now working with the folks in Greene County because they enjoy it as well. You know, what's something new we could do? How can we maybe I would like to say a wow factor, but even if it's isn't a wow factor, if we collectively have new things to where people come next year, and they're even more excited. And each year, you know, the plan is each year is just something new, more improvement. I mean, look at what's going to happen this year. I mean, we got another building, and then the following year we'll have yet another new nice building built, and then working on mitigating that mud situation, getting some kind of, you know, more solid ground in place, if you will, for the flea market, because I love the flea market. I want to see it continue. I want to see it thrive. And it presents a wonderful variety between the old and the new. And when you look at, when I looked at Hambinchin last year, and I saw so many people, and they were spread out just nicely. I mean, people were moving from one interesting area to another, and they enjoyed the outside area. And we want to make that so even better. So, you know, looking at the things that we can improve on. I mean, the forum rooms, they were a little noisy because of the air handling units. That'll be fixed. We have already going to get that fixed. And last year, you know, our club, the Dayton Amateur Radio Association, we invested a significant amount of money to improve the infrastructure in those buildings. And now the exciting thing for Greene County and the Expo Center is they can handle different events, bigger events. And Dayton is, you know, in that Montgomery County area where Dayton was, I don't think they can keep up. So we are, I don't want to badmouth them, but because they're still partners with us in many ways.
Well, we just have new opportunities. That's all.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You just have new opportunities. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, it's just new options and new partnerships.
That's right, and that's what makes an organization better. Now, the other thing I'd like to talk a little bit about is hotels, motels, bed and breakfast, places to stay. A lot of people get into staying at the same place they stayed at before. Well, we always stayed in Dayton and some place over there. And, oh, it's only a 45-minute drive or, you know, from clear to the other side of Dayton. Now, it's not far from the center of Dayton to get to Xenia. It's really not a bad drive at all. However, when you get into the Beaver Creek area and you get in toward like Yellow Springs and Xenia and places just south of there, there's some very nice places and excellent restaurants in Greene County. So I want to put a word out about the Greene County Convention Visitors Bureau. You can find that online. And I talked to them tonight. They were at our meeting tonight, those people that run that. And they are more than willing, if you even call them up, hey, where's a good place to stay? Where can I stay? This is what I'm looking for. To help you. But I wouldn't wait too long to make reservations. Evidently, they're telling me, what is this, February? And a lot of things are getting bought out. The other thing is looking up the Airbnbs in the region. You know, you can just look up Airbnb somewhere near Xenia, Ohio, and it'll kind of fan out, and it'll be able to tell you what's available. That's not a bad way to go. We are hearing that there's a university, it's called Central State University, not far from Xenia. And they have a lot of parking, but they also have a lot of rooms, and the classes won't be in session at that time. And they're going to provide meals, place to stay, and a shuttle service from Central State University. And there's more to come on that soon. But that's like a 4 or 5 mile ride. That's all it is. Now, for people who are looking to camp on the grounds, that pretty much looks like it's filled up right now, and there's a waiting list for people to, well, I think there's like 40 or 50 people on the waiting list. But if I were you, if I was coming to the event and wanted to camp, I would go to Caesars Creek State Park, just south of Xenia, and it's on off of a beautiful country road. It sits on a beautiful lake. And this particular state park, you're not allowed to build on the lake. So it's very primitive in a lot of ways. But the campground has 278 spots, and it has 30 amp capacity for the campers. Beautiful place. Back to you, Ted.
30 amp capacity. So how big of an amplifier could you run out of your RV?
Well, it depends on what else you're running at one time, but you could probably, if you hook into the 220 side of it, you could run full legal limit probably.
Anyhow, one thing that I think is, is kind of uncanny. All right. When you get to Dayton, you start walking around the vendor buildings. Okay. And, God bless each and every one of those vendors that come. And that's another thing, too, that folks ought to consider. If you do have some kind of a product or something, this is where to go. Because, it can be a good business venture, a good investment to show up at Dayton and get a booth. And I say Dayton, Xenia, at Hamvention. I got to break myself of that habit. Anyways, to show up and display whatever it is that you do. Because there's nothing like hands-on. And I'll tell you, I walk through those buildings and I see things that I didn't even know existed. And I mean, I thumb through all the ads and the magazines and I look on the internet and stuff, but you'll see things there that you didn't know ever was. And I mean, and it's hands-on. Yeah, the other thing is there's so many times I have thought about, like a particular transceiver, let's say an amateur radio transceiver. And you look at the pictures and the magazines and all that. But then when you wind up at Xenia and the manufacturer's there and they've got their thing on display and you look at it and, it looks completely different than what you've been thinking in the magazine. There's nothing like, I guess I want to say, face-to-face or FaceTime live, real, analog, not a YouTube video and all that, but actually looking at the product, within 6 inches of it or being able to touch it or pick it up. There's nothing that you can substitute for that. And that's what you have the opportunity to do at the Dayton Hamvention. I don't care what you're looking for. I don't care if it's an antenna tuner. My goodness, Martin Jupe brings everything, out of the plant. And he has everything there. So you can pick up and touch and push buttons and, view every little thing that you think you may want, and it'll be there. And someone's there to answer your questions. And all kinds of new stuff, new technology, and you'll see that there. And you may not understand it. And I mean, at least with me, I walk through and I'm looking at stuff and I think, what is this? But when you stop and you talk to the people, it'll blow your mind. Because they're doing stuff that people no one even dreamed of 5 years ago, and it's happening, right now. And I don't know, I look at it like that. It's a very valuable learning experience. If you've been in amateur radio for 30 years, this is where you catch up. this is where people like me have the opportunity to get introduced into new modes and different because there's all these new digital modes and people talk about it and I go, what's that? And when you go to Dayton, there's somebody there. Plus the forums. My goodness gracious, the forums. You can learn so much stuff. You're thinking, I don't know. I don't understand that. I wish I could learn about that. Well, you can. And I don't know what the forums are. I don't know what list you have. But, I mean, every year there are more forums than you could possibly hope to attend. So you would have to kind of pick out what you want to do. But if there's something that you're interested in amateur radio that you really want to get into, but yet you don't have really anybody in your area to talk to, and you've read the books and you're confused, there's forums. Go to the forums, and you can ask questions, and you can meet the experts face-to-face. When the forum's over with, you can go up and talk to them. Anyways, tell us about that a little bit. I'd like to hear what's on tap. If you have those notes handy, because I know there's so many of them. I don't know, Michael, you'd be able to remember, you know, all of them.
I was talking to Terry tonight. Terry is in charge of the forums, and there will be, we're looking for, you know, very interesting forums, but they will be, as soon as they're all solidified, they will be at listed at hambenchon.org. But I will tell you this, it looks like normally we have four forums going on the whole time Hamvention's open, four at one time. All right, so this year it looks like we may be able to have a fifth forum going on. So we may be adding yet one more forum. And the demand, we get swamped with people who want to give forums. And Ted, I'm not really ready to tell you exactly which ones that we've got all planned, but they're going to be great. I know that. But it gives me an opportunity to tell you one of the things that we want to focus on, and we've asked our forum speakers to do this, is that our theme this year is simply amateur radio serving the community. And in light of the fires that we've had in the United States and the hurricanes that we've had, earthquakes and all the flooding, severe storms, tornadoes, that we decided it was really time to begin to refocus on how we as amateur radio operators really respond to an emergency. What is the latest thinking and how do we really do that? For example, my friends in India, when we were trying to figure out what can we get you, they said, you know, Michael, don't bring things that I got that are really heavy to carry, because when we go in there, we have to carry it on our backs for a while before they can get from one point of transportation to another. They said, you know, sending big amplifiers and all that's not going to work. So the thinking is, and for the actual rescue people, the folks that are working on the ground there, they have to have a minimal ability to carry things. Or they have a minimal ability to carry things. So then you have people like us that we have to have good ears, have to be able to listen, and we have to understand, you know, good protocol. Who is actually going to relay back, and not, you know, 1,000 people that are trying to call back and as a large pileup. So, you know, those are the kinds of things that we're hoping will come of this, and even emergency communication vehicles. And how do we coordinate? We got so many great emergency vehicles in this country. How do we coordinate that? Who coordinates that? I mean, what if one of them has to be deployed? How are you ready to deploy? What does it take to deploy, and who makes that call? Those are, you know, that's a big theme this year, a big concern for our club, and I think for amateur radios worldwide. What do you think, Ted?
Well, you know, I think that there has to be, I guess I want to kind of say a central focus on emergency communications, and you have to have a central theme. I think that serving the community. You know, and a lot of folks get a little confused over this too. They think that, you know, they see us hams, you know, as if we're jumping in the middle of some really, really, you know, horrible situations. And that's true. I mean, it really is. But then sometimes our emergency communication is when other forms of communication go down and other things have failed, we wind up doing something like Meals on Wheels delivery, you know, taking water to people. You know, I mean, it's really some basic things like that that we're able to do because we have the communications to coordinate it. And even though those are very, very basic things, oh, my God, are they needed? I mean, you know, some elderly person is sitting at home and, man, they light up like a Christmas tree when somebody shows up with Meals on Wheels, you know, and they haven't eaten, you know, especially if they're to the point where they can't necessarily prepare food for themselves and that sort of thing. But there's a ham radio service there that looks on the surface as being kind of trite, but it's not. And so sometimes the most simple jobs, the most simple assignments have more meaning in the community than what you could possibly even imagine. I don't know. That's my that's my take on it. You know, I think so. But tell me about. I know I saw some stuff about MCOM, and I know this is a focus on ham radio helping the community. Why don't you get into this a little bit as to what you feel is the forte of us guys and us gals as to what we're doing and how we can make a huge difference.
Well, I think. I'm certainly not an expert on this, but I just think that, you know, great minds can get together and think about this. And just, I would say what we've done in the past, we kind of move it aside. My experience on HF is that when, in an emergency, is that you have, and I don't mean this to be offensive, but you've got, you know, hundreds of, you know, the lower power stations that are all kind of clamoring and trying to be heard, and then the guys that can run the full legal limit, that have good antennas, that are set up well, you know, and have honed that down, those are the people that can really relay information. And, I'm not trying to be, everybody wants to help, but at the same time, if you're the one making that connection to a relay station, and then, you know, figure out what is it you're going to do. Are you going to be able to stay with it and understand what is the information you're going to carry and how do you do that? And in my opinion, I think if we work together to understand what that protocol, not just a protocol for this country, but a protocol for world issues, because that's the world's getting smaller as we speak in terms of communication and dependency on each other. So I am not the deep thinker on this by any means, but I know that there are people that spend their time on it. But I would say to the people that do spend their time on it, kind of broaden your gaze to what can we do differently that might make more sense than what we've done in the past. And how can we be more to the community and to an emergency situation? Those are my thoughts, Ted. I mean, that's a bit of a ramble, but I've thought a lot about it.
You know, there are very few hobbies that can stick around for a century. But amateur radio is one of the growing survivors, with about 3 million currently active hams worldwide. Most of us know about the public service aspect of our hobby and how we can help neighbors by providing emergency communications. It works when nothing else does. But there's more to it than that. Hams are part of a worldwide community that spread goodwill with some of the nicest, smartest, and most interesting people that you'll ever meet. Of course, you know, it's easy to interest people in ham radio, but then there's that pesky test. And for many, that's a big stop sign. Those technical questions might as well be a foreign language to a newcomer. And frankly, a lot of the teaching tools aren't very good. But now, thankfully, there's a game changer. It's called Ham Test Online, and it turns the gobbledygook into something that's pretty easy to understand, and that makes getting licensed really easy. And not only is it inexpensive, but it comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. You get your ticket, or you get your money back. And in a recent independent study of new hams, 97% gave Ham Test Online 5 stars. So if you've been putting off getting your license, no problem. Maybe you're a technician wanting to upgrade to general or extra. No problem. Try it right now. The first 50 questions are free. Your success is guaranteed. Try it out right now. www.hamtestonline.com. That's www.hamtestonline.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Folks, I want to talk to you for just a minute about the main trading company. The proprietor, Richard Lenore. But they've got everything you could possibly want. And just to name a few things, they've got wires and cables and antennas and amplifiers and antenna tuners and radios and handhelds and VHF, UHF, the whole deal. And if you're confused and you've got questions, pick up the phone and call and talk to Richard Lenore. You can't go wrong. These are people that you'll love to deal with. You'll make friends for life. The main trading company in Paris, Texas. That's where you need to go. There are few geniuses in the world today, but one of them is Bob Greenberg, W2CYK. He invented R-Finder. What this is an app for your cell phone. And, of course, your cell phone knows where you are by means of GPS. When you go into a city or even your hometown and open up R-Finder, it tells you every repeater in your immediate area. It gives you the split. It gives you the PL tone. It tells you whether it's on Echolink, IRLP, or DMR. All of it's there, all the information you need on R-Finder. Go to rfinder.net. That's rfinder.net. If you've got a two-way radio in your car, you're a ham operator and a cell phone, you need R-Finder. rfinder.net.
Well, let me ask you this question about our focus at Hamvention. How many different sort of, I guess I want to say, boy, this is a nebulous thing. How many different kinds of things do you see at Hamvention that are sectors of ham radio? Like, for example, let's just use for an example something that I'm just not into, and that's contesting. I don't know why. It just, to me, when the contests are on, my radio's off. Okay, that's just me. All right, but contesting is a big deal, you know, to a lot of guys. And there's other things like you said, DXing is a big deal to a lot of people. Some people just don't. That's just not their cup of tea, you know. And some folks are heavy, heavy into data. Some folks are heavy into, I guess I want to say, rag chewing or just regular old, you know, kick your shoes off and pour a cup of coffee and sit here and talk. How do those folks find their, I guess I want to say, niche at the Dayton Hamvention? Because I know there's varied interests, but how do they get plugged into the right area?
Well, that's a good question. Let me, I can kind of begin to answer that. First off, you mentioned the contesters. Tim Duffy, K3LR, and our very good friends. And I'm not a contester, but he runs Contest University on Thursdays. And he has a book that comes out, and he has a team of instructors, really high quality instructors. And they meet at the Crown Plaza in Dayton, and they start off early and they go all day on that Thursday. And they have banquets and meetings where all these contesters can meet, and they can hone in on what they like to do in a contest. And if you really look at the contesting, and I know it bothers people, like, well, what is that really about? I don't like that. I just want to rag chew. But still, it teaches people how to, the nuances of how to keep their equipment in good shape, maybe how to communicate in a different way. But those people absolutely love contesting. And there's a lot of people that are learning the art, and because it It truly is an art. And then let's move that a little bit to the satellite folks. You know, I know you've had KB1SF. I call him Keith Baker, one satellite fanatic. And Keith Baker's been on your program, and
we can't keep him off.
Well, whatever.
He's a dear friend, and he's a mountain of information when it comes to satellites. But go ahead.
He is, but I think that those people, you know, the AMSAT people, they have their offsite dinner, and they have a forum, I believe. And they have so much information at their booth. And what an exciting form of amateur radio. Now I know that they're about to shoot off some or place in orbit some more of those small satellites that they're putting up there for communication. But I mean, how exciting is that in the hobby to be able to say, well, you know, at Hamvention, there's a group of guys there that they build their own satellites and put them up there, you know. Really? Yeah. And then, you know, the list goes on and on to all these people that have all these clubs and organizations that have their meetings in the evenings of Hamvention, and they get together and they kind of celebrate their particular focus in the hobby. I guess I got on to some of the satellite guys in a nice way. I said, you know, when Elon Musk shot off his that beautiful heavy Falcon rocket and put his car out there into space, why wasn't there some kind of a repeater on his car? How did we miss that? You know, you know, I mean, that's the excitement that we have in the world right now. And that kind of communication.
Well, let me ask you a question. Are there any balloon launches planned?
Yes. Yes, there is. And you have to stay tuned to hamvention.org for that information of exactly when that's going to be. Yes, there will be a balloon launch.
Or we can go up there and we can also talk about it on the radio and tell folks. So I think the balloon launches are cool.
As we get closer, Ted, I will be able to unfold the times and things like that. But I don't want to give false information now.
Well, you know, I wanted to get involved with talking to you early on. And the reason why, and we're going to cover a subject here that it's almost a little bit humorous. But and the reason why is because there is a interconnect between hams. I don't know. It's like rumors move by means of osmosis somehow. I don't know how they do. But nonetheless, they do. So let's talk about that. I mean, I realize that you guys got hit with, and I know when the venue moved, our email pots just filled right up. People saying, "Is there gonna be another Hamvention?" You know, and at that time, I didn't have any contact with anybody, so I just started writing emails back saying, "Yes, there will be a 2017 Hamvention." You know, and I'm thinking, biting my tongue, saying, "I sure as hope it's gonna be," but. But you got to have faith. You got to think, you know, would these guys allow this thing to just go by the wayside because of the inconvenience and loss of the venue? And then all of a sudden, here comes Xenia, and you guys had to move this whole thing, not having any clue as to how it was all going to work or fit together. You know, so, but you know what? That's one thing about amateur radio guys, and that is, most of us are very, very persistent, and you know, we take seriously the magic of the hobby, if we want to call it a hobby, but it's a fraternity. And we, you know, if Art hears me say that, he shoots me. It's the magic of the fraternity of ham radio, and so that's really, you know, that's the focus of keeping it going. So with that in mind, you know, but nonetheless. There's rumors, okay, rumors going around, and Keith was telling me a little bit about some of the stuff, and then I've had people, you know, calling us on the QSO phone lines, the WTWW phone lines, and asking all kinds of crazy questions, and I scratch my head, and I say, where does this stuff get started? So why don't you talk about that a little bit, dispel anything that you've heard that's just not going to happen.
You know, I actually, a lot of the rumors just amaze me and stun me where they came from. And you asked me what I do at for Hamvention and DARA. Well, I am a board member. I am the chief financial officer for both DARA and the Hamvention. I'm also the official spokesperson and have been for many years for Hamvention. And in 2011 and 2012, I ran Hamvention. And I've been a member of the committees at Hamvention since, 30 years almost, maybe not quite that long, but quite a few years, and have always been persistently involved. Now, unless you hear, if you hear a rumor, unless either myself or Ron Kramer, the general chairman, say that it's true or false, you know, if somebody says something the way it's going to be and we say no, and that's not the way it's going to be. But that's why we have, you know, particular people who speak for Hamvention. So we don't have a whole lot of excess outside people that maybe don't know all the inner workings of the organization. So what rumors have I heard? I've heard that we're going to move to another site this year. No, we're not. We're trying to build where we're at now. That's probably been one of the most persistent rumors of it. Now, last year, it was serious last year. Do we close it down and wait a year, or do we just go for it? But you know what? The thing that we recognize in Dayton and with Hamvention is that we are an important pillar for amateur radio. So we decided that, hey, if we don't do this, if we drop out a year, how many organizations would that hurt? How many new innovations come about every year that that people want to get out and they want to show it and they come to Hamvention for that? And we recognize that. So there were 657 volunteers that busted their butts to make it happen. The other rumors that I kind of want to dispel is the fact that, you know, organizations like Hamcation, you know, the Orlando Club, what a wonderful event that is. And hence Huntsville, you know, Charlie and I, when Charlie was there, we were really good buddies. The folks in Friedrichshof in Germany, you know, I had the opportunity, even this year I was a speaker three different times, even had the opportunity to say some words at their opening ceremony. And in Tokyo, we are really developing a good relationship with people in Tokyo and that side of the world. But we're all the people that put on these big ham fests. I mean, we go to CPAC. I've talked to the general chairman up in from Michigan. You know, we're not about us versus them. If Orlando is successful, if Huntsville is successful, if all these different ham radio events are successful, we're all going to be successful. You know, we're not trying to be the biggest and toughest and put anybody out of business by any means. We want to support our friends that put on other events. It's important to us because, you know, look at it this way. If we're all successful, it brings more people into the hobby. The vendors will have more money to spend on innovation and bringing in new things forward. So it is a real win-win. And then we get the opportunity to bring in more new hams. So we see that way, and I don't like the rumor that, you know, it's all about, well, you know, Hamvention's or Hamcation's catching up with you, or this is a better event. I don't really care. I mean, every event has their own special nuance. As a matter of fact, I just got an email from the general chairman today, this evening, from Hamcation, and I was down there, had a great time. And we went to a banquet. We share lots of ideas. How can we be successful? That's a big rumor and out there that we don't all get along and it's like a big competition. Maybe to some small way, but the competition is what are we going to do to be as good as this club? Boy, look at all the great things that Hamcation does. Look at all the great things that Huntsville does. HamCon, CPAC, all these wonderful places.
Well, you know, when we were, we would be set up broadcasting in Dayton, and here would come Charlie Emerson. You know, he'd come strolling in, you know, and he'd sit down. Well, hello, Ted, how you doing? You know, are you coming to see us this year? You know? And I would ask him, I'd say, because I'd see Charlie everywhere, but he was always at Dayton. He was at every Dayton that I can remember, you know, that we were broadcasting. I found air checks here the other day of broadcasting Dayton. When was it? 2009 and prior, I found, you know, air checks where we had been on the air there. You know, so he was there all the time. But I asked him one time, I said, why do you show up at a competing ham fest? Oh, he said, this is not a competing ham fest. He said, I come because I like it. I enjoy it. It's fun. And you know, once again, like Alan Pitt said, for the fellowship and all that kind of thing, you know. So wouldn't it be a shame? Wouldn't it be a shame if some of these ham fests failed? You know, wouldn't it be horrible? Because, I mean, you know, if I were a retired person, I would love to go to, you know, I'd love to go to Hamvention, and then I'd love to go to Hamcation, and if I could afford it, I'd like to go, you know, a few other places too. But we always went to Huntsville, and you're right, Charlie, who ran one of the most successful ham fests for its being its size and whatnot, he did not see any other ham fest as being a contest. You know, it was for fun, it was for fellowship, and that's why he went. You know. And, of course, now Charlie was good for radio because you could get him on the air and then you could just simply, you know, get up from your post and set your headphones down and go in the other room, make a sandwich and come back. And Charlie's still talking, you know, so we had a lot of fun with Charlie Emerson. Boy, I miss him. He was.
Yeah, I do, too. I have pictures of he and I together at in different locations and I treasure that. And, you know, as, you know, you mentioned Bob Heil. I mean, there's a guy that's a real pillar. You know, I could go on, you know, Tim Duffy with all the powerhouse stuff that he's doing now. And, you know, I got a chance to spend a lot of time with my friend Fred Lloyd, you know, from QRZ down in Florida. There's a guy that's, you know, he's really pulled together, you know, sort of the a LinkedIn, if you will, of or Facebook of amateur radio with QRZ.
We had a small, very small ham fest here in Lebanon at that time, and we always went to it. They had an outdoor flea market, so I went, and I was getting a little tired, so I thought, well, I'm going to go over and sit down. And I looked across the table, and I said, boy, does that guy, I said, that's Fred Lloyd, you know, and he was visiting this little ham fest. And, of course, we had a great conversation. I've interviewed him several times on the air, you know, and where would we be without QRZ, you know? And a funny story he told. He said he was somewhere, I don't remember. He was out in the middle of nowhere, like out in the middle of the ocean or someplace, some foreign land or something. And he was listening to a couple guys talking, and they were speaking broken English or whatnot, you know. And the one guy just popped up and said, "Well, I'm good on QRZ," you know. And it kind of hit him the magnitude of this thing he started, you know. It's funny to hear him tell that. If you ever have a chance, encourage him to tell it. But I want to ask you a question now. I want to ask this. You're so involved in this, and so, I mean, you are so tuned in and, you know, really dedicated to the cause of the Dayton or the Xenia Hamvention. It's going to take me a while to break myself of that. But anyhow, My first Hamvention was 1976 that I can remember. Okay, and then I came in 77 and 78, and I came with friends. And one year we went and we toured the Voice of America because they were still broadcasting there at Bethany. And but I remember all of those years. In each one of those years, and I can't remember individual things, but each one of them had that same special flavor, the Dayton flavor, if you want to call it that, that you don't, it's just different than any other ham fest that you would attend. There's a different You know, there's a different feel in the air, you know, with the people and everything. But I want to ask you this question. Because folks are listening to Michael Coulter and they're hearing him talk and this intense interest he's got. Talk about your beginnings in ham radio. What got you started? What was the very first time you ever saw an amateur radio rig operate and you said, oh, my God, I have to do this? I want to hear this oh, my God story, okay?
Well, you know, I was a young kid. I had watched, I had been tuning up and down through the, as I mentioned, on shortwave. And
where did you get a shortwave radio, or how did that start?
Okay, my father had a Zenith. This old big Zenith that would be. Remember the radios that would have a record player in it, and it would have, play 45s and 78s. And then it had the 33 and the 30 in it too. And then it had that beautiful dial with all the different bands. And I'd go up and down that thing. And then I would hook up, had a little place usually in the back where you could put an antenna. And I tried everything. I'd go by wire and run 1,000 feet of wire out just to see what that would do. Or, did I ever hook it up to bed springs? Yeah, I tried everything, and very excited. I really wanted to meet some amateur radio operators. I thought, am I weird? Am I the only one around? And so I went up to the little store that I could ride my bicycle to, and it's called Alltronics. I'd go up there and just like, oh, my God, look at all this cool radio stuff. Couldn't afford any of it. And then, of course, then I had the probably like you, the Lafayette catalogs, the Allied Radio catalog.
Oh, my God, yes.
And then I saved up enough money. I was wanting to buy a Heath kit. Couldn't quite afford it. I bought a Knight kit. First radio I put together, it's just a simple Knight kit R55A receiver. You know, I had that. It was, you know, really neat how you go through and you check each step and you'd, you know, hope to God you soldered it, you know, didn't have a bad soldering point.
And that, I think it had two knobs. One was tuning, one was band spread, right next to each other.
Right.
And like a slide rule dial.
Right. And with all that string, and you had to tie that string just right to get that dial to work, you know. So, and it was so neat when I finally, okay, I think I got it done. I plugged it in. Nothing happened. It's like, oh, no. And I kept going and looking to see, and I found a soldering connection that was, had broken away. And I re-soldered it. And then the thing started to come to life a little bit. And it was like, yeah, that was so great. But I so much enjoyed putting that thing together. And that, you know, I was in the lower part of the house and a workbench in the basement when I was a kid. And, it was summertime, I'd wear shorts and so I'd be soldering there. And I have all these scars from the solder dropping on my legs. You know? oh, ouch. You know, I mean, probably other guys do too. I've talked to people.
You know, that or you're burning holes in your pants too. That's another thing. It sticks to the
pants. But you know, at any rate, so I was really excited about that. I bought the, the license manuals and things like that, trying to figure it out. But I never could connect with amateur radio operators then. My parents, I couldn't figure out where they were at or how to connect to anybody. So, you know, I kind of let that lapse a little bit. And wasn't until years later in my life that I got really excited about it again, had the time, and I dove right into it. So, and in my life, I do hold a master's degree in business, but I had actually started my life in electrical and electronic repair, served an apprenticeship, and which is a word that I don't hear used in this country much anymore, is apprenticeship. And I learned a lot of great stuff about, electrical and electronic troubleshooting, and I got pretty good at it, and I really got to love it. And but then, for whatever stupid reason, when I finished a master's degree, actually finished my undergrad, I went into management. And then as I got a little bit older, I realized, I wonder what radio is like now. And I got involved with a club. I saw a flyer to take a class, and I went and took a class. And actually, from the time I started the class, within a few months, I learned the code at 20 word a minute required for extra. And it took me maybe 3 months to get my extra class. I was that excited about that, involved in it. So so now I am a life member of the Quarter Century Club, and life member of DARA, life member of QRZ, and a life member of the Radio Club of America. So, and I love amateur radio, and I really have enjoyed the journey so far. Don't want it to end, and I want to be able to share this excitement with younger people and with, you know, even older people. You know, because we have a lot of people that are retiring now that sort of got into it when they were a kid, and then they never really followed through. But now's the time. And we have people in their younger men and women in their 20s to maybe 35 or so that are starting to get more interested. In India, there are so many. The newest hams coming on in India are young people from teenagers up to 30. Unbelievable. And they love it. So,
you know, the amazing thing, too, I've noticed what's happening to us, and I'm talking right now, but probably more so stateside, and that is the shortwave station, WTWW, we have an increasing number of millennials listening, you know, and they write, and we hear from them, and they get all excited. And, of course, they are a great, I guess I want to say, area of development to encourage to get back or to get into ham radio. I mean, because this is, you know, and it's something, it's kind of funny because I heard a long time ago, I said, well, now that the computers are out and their cell phones, but that doesn't even phase these guys, the millennials that we have listening, and the number of them is really kind of shocking, to tell you the truth. But I think they're just tired of the status quo, you know, and I think they're looking for something different. And this is something different.
It is something different.
You know,
speaking of something different and somebody different, I've been communicating the last few days with Gordon West. And those of you who are interested in getting a radio license, this guy, look him up. Just Google Gordon West. And he's an amazing amateur radio teacher, from young people to really old people like me and Ted, but I still learn from him. Very entertaining. He's very passionate, and he'll be at Hamvention as well. And I know, Ted, you see him a lot. He's on one of the shows you participate in. So,
all right. We have Ham Nation on, the audio portion of Ham Nation on Wednesday nights, and Gordo's always on there, and he's always very interesting. But I'll tell you something else that's going on that we got into kind of early. We got an association with these folks that are running this thing called Ham Test Online. And at first, when I heard about it, I really didn't know what to think. But now, I've got friends of mine that have taken the test and have passed and now have some knowledge that didn't really know how to put batteries in a flashlight. I mean, they were at that level. And at Hamvention, every year we must get 20, 30, sometimes as much as 40 people that come to the booth and say, hey, you know, you all are the reason why and are at fault, you know, for getting us into this hobby, you know. And that always just makes us feel so good. But that's another thing. And I, of course, tell folks, you know, do the ham test online thing and then get Gordo's books to go with it. And there's no way you can fail. You just can't. And there's no way. And people have a good time doing this. They really do. It's not the drudgery. I remember, you know, and I will say this is kind of a funny story. I remember when we went in to do our testing years ago at the FCC office in Detroit. And if you passed the test, they would yell across the room, you know, they would say, Ted, you'd raise your hand, you'd say, you have passed. And you got a grin on your face, you know. But there was this other thing they did, which I never figured out, and I've talked to other people that went into other field offices, and they must have done it everywhere. Actually, no, they wouldn't do that. They would call you up to the front. That's what it was. And they would tell you, you know, Ted, you've passed. Okay. But now if you failed, they would yell across the room. You know, and they would say, Michael, you failed. how intimidating was that, you know? But that was back then. I don't know how it is today. Of course, now we have volunteer examiners, and you take the test in a real comfortable location and all that sort of thing. So it's a whole lot better than it was in yesteryear, you know. But all of that. Plus, there's always been somebody at the Dayton Hamvention teaching a class, and amazing number of people pass at that class. And I can't remember the gentleman's name. You may know who he is. I don't know. But every year he's been there teaching, you know. Gordo is an amazing guy, and I think that people who are, you know, they're intimidated, and they feel they need, you know, that coaching and whatnot. You know, he is absolutely, I guess I want to say, worth his weight in gold. You know, he really is. And I love seeing him with the shorts on and the professor hat at Dayton. I think that's absolutely priceless. He absolutely puts his whole heart into this, you know, and you can't walk away having not known what Gordo's up to. You know, he's trying to get folks those tickets. You know, he wants them on the air. We're getting close. Go ahead.
I was going to say that he is, you know, one of the more positive, exciting people in the amateur radio realm.
Absolutely. Right, beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah, but there's so many. I mean, I meet so many people like that from all over the world. And you know, Japan, those folks, I mean, they just keep – they might not have – it's interesting when you travel through Japan, through Tokyo anyway. You know, you travel – I travel the trains that they have there and subways. And looking at the buildings, and occasionally I see the antenna on there. And they can't – they don't have enough room to put up these great big towers and stuff most usually. But there are sure a lot of hams there. And there's a place called Radio City in Tokyo. And I went there. There's another name for it, too, a Japanese name I can't recall. But there is a section there, and they sell all these amateur radio parts and radios, all this equipment. And it's really exciting to go through that shopping district. I've never seen anything quite like it. So.
Yeah, I know. Keith sent me some pictures of that, and I was like, whoa, man, would I love to go there, you know, and pack a lunch, you know.
yeah, I believe you would. It is pretty amazing.
Well, listen.
Japan's an amazing place anyway.
We're about out of time, so I want to do a quick rundown summary. Folks, if you have tuned in and you say, what in the world are these guys? Who are they? What's going on here? I'm talking to Michael Coulter, WHCI, and he is, the overall information manager for the Dayton Hamvention. In the past, he's been chair. I guess he's worn every hat there, and hopefully they won't run out of hats. And we're talking about 2018, and I just want to say we're about out of time, but I want you to kind of sum things up. If you would, Michael, and then we're going to have to get back on the air a little later and talk some more about new developments.
Certainly. And so, Ted, once again, I love your support of amateur radio and Hamvention, and I think we definitely are both members of that fraternity and share the passion there. But I want to let everybody know that Hamvention, just a wonderful event. And actually Xenia, Ohio now, and they can find out more about it at www.hamvention.org. And we keep that website pretty fresh, up to date. And I would, if you have any particular questions that you need answered, my call sign is once again, WHCI, Whiskey 8 Charlie India. And I'm good on QRZ, which means that you can look up my email address there, at www.qrz.com, and you'll be able to find my my email address. That's, and if you have any questions, please forward them my way, or comments, and or to Ted, and I think he'll forward them to me as well. But if you have any ideas about, you're going to come to Hamvention, and maybe you're on, in another part of the world. Maybe you need a letters to get a visa. My friend's in India, and there were what's her, Yamani, and her call is Victor United 2, Yankee Alpha Mike. And she sent me an email this morning, and she said, look, I want to bring my husband and my kids. I need the visa letters written. And we have already gotten those into the, we have a way to do that. So if you are in another part of the world and you're interested and you need that visa for permission, we can definitely try to help you get there. But anyway, thank you for listening. And I hope that it was somewhat entertaining. I'm always entertained listening to Ted. So with that, Ted, I'll turn it back over to you. And thanks, everybody, from wherever you are listening.
All righty. Well, that's been it's been a real good QSO. I really appreciate you coming on board. And I know a lot of folks that are tuned in that have gotten a lot of information. And, you know, and be listening, because Michael will come back and we'll do some updates and whatnot. So 73s, everyone, thanks for listening. Joining us again next week, same time, same station. David, any final comments?
Looking forward to them food vendors.
Looking to the food vendors. You know, and he's the skinny one, too. This is not fair. So anyhow, thank you much, folks. 73s. Okay, now that that's over with, I want to get some quick, like, liner things from you. And I mean just off the wall, off the cuff kind of thing. Hi, this is Michael Coulter with the Dayton Hamvention, and we really want to see you, you know, at, or the Xenia Hamvention. We really want to see you this year in Xenia. We've got exciting things coming up. Just to, you know, and I'll incorporate that into some 60-second spots that we'll run throughout the day, because we, you know, we run country music programming at night. We take phone calls from hams. We have the Saturday block and the Saturday night block, and we'll run all that during that time, which is, you know, Ham Nation and Amateur Radio Newsline and Hamp Holly's Rain Report and all that stuff. So if you just come up with some little zingers just off the cuff, doesn't have to be anything at all. We'll edit if it isn't. If it fluff it, don't worry, just do it again. You know, so I think that'll make it sound really cool if we're doing a spot and I can just hit that and then come back in. If that, I don't know if that makes any sense to you.
Yep, it does.
Okay. So I was on your mark, get set.
Hello, everyone. This is Michael Coulter, Whiskey 8 Charlie India, amateur radio station WACI. And I'm with the Dayton Hamvention, and I'm giving you a personal invitation to come to Xenia, Ohio. That's X-E-N-I-A, Ohio, for the largest amateur radio gathering in the world. And if you're into shortwave listening, if you're into electronics, and you're even curious about amateur radio, please come to Dayton. You can find more information about our event at www.hamvention.org. Hello, everyone. This is Michael Coulter with Dayton Hamvention. And Hamvention is the largest gathering of amateur radio operators in the world. My call, once again, is Whiskey 8 Charlie India, W-8-C-I. If you want information, you can go to hamvention.org, or you can go to www.qrz.com, and it'll tell you to type in my call sign, which is Whiskey 8 Charlie India. You can send me an email with a comment or a question, and we will get the right people back to, the right answer back to you. Hello, everyone. This is Michael Coulter, Whiskey 8 Charlie India from the Xenia Hamvention, and we are really excited about our event that's coming up in May, and we would like for you to consider attending. And you can get more information about the many activities that occur over that three-day weekend. We have many forums, informational forums about amateur radio going on. We have vendors from literally everywhere and all types of electronics equipment. And even if you aren't an amateur radio operator, but you are interested in electronics or computers, please give us an opportunity. Come and visit us, www.hambenchin.org. How's that, Ted?
Those are good. Those are good. And, you know, and I can tighten them up a bit for you, too, when we get ready to air them.
Yeah.
And we can
kind of caught me after 2 hours of talking.
Oh, I know. But that, you know, and of course, I'm used to it, so I think everybody can do 2.5 hours of it. This is a long radio show, but let me tell you something. When we first started this, I had people say, oh, my God, you know, a 2-hour show? Are you kidding me? What are you going to talk about?